morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Richard Gardner representing Fair and Timothy Barrow. Your Honor, in this case, ATF denied Mr. Barrow's applications to import a number of firearms barrels using ATF's purported authority under 18 U.S.C. 925 D3. And the issue in this case is whether their application interpretation 925 D3 was correct in this situation. And it's our position that it is not, that they have misinterpreted, that ATF has misinterpreted its authority under 925 D3. And that interpretation is expressed, or was expressed, in ATF's open letter of July 13, 2005, in which it gave as a specific example of importations that would be denied as importation of repair and replacement barrels. And prior to the issuance of this open letter, there was no change in the statute, there were no change in the regulations. This just came essentially out of the blue based upon an opinion done by the Office of Legal Counsel. And as I said, it's our position that ATF does not have the authority to deny the import of barrels which may be used for the assembly of either importable rifles or the assembly of importable handguns, and that it does not bar the importation of barrels, as in this case, which had at one time been used in machine guns.
And where does that come from in the language of the statute?
Your Honor, in the statute, the exemption language was added in 1986, talks about the key word in that exemption is such firearm. And the question at the very end is, it shall be unlawful to import any frame, receiver, or barrel of such firearm which would be prohibited if assembled. And the question is, what are you referring back to in the phrase such firearm? And I think the only thing that makes any sense to construe the statute is you're talking about whether it is a firearm that meets the so-called sporting purposes test, that is, a firearm that is generally recognized as particularly suitable for or readily adaptable to sporting purposes. The other two prohibitions, that is, whether it's a machine gun, an NFA weapon, it does not refer back to that because the Secretary can't ever authorize the importation of those. So clearly, I think the only way you can understand the statute.
Attorney General.
Has no authority. Yeah.
You said Secretary. I think you meant.
I'm sorry. It used to be the Secretary, the Attorney General. The only way that you can construe the statute is that the such firearm refers back to the sporting purposes test only. And
is that because the Attorney General can't approve the other?
That's correct. He cannot approve the import of it.
But if someone files an application to import a machine gun,
yes,
the Secretary will not authorize it, correct?
The Attorney General.
I mean the Attorney General.
If it's being...
will not being, authorize it, correct?
Unless it's being imported for government use.
No. I understand.
For private use.
So I don't understand how the language helps you, because he has not authorized that weapon.
Right, but he doesn't have the authority to authorize it in the first place. I mean, he can't...
Yeah,
so the only...
But what difference does it make in terms of the language of the statute, whether he refuses to authorize it because it doesn't qualify as a sporting weapon or because he lacks authority? The fact is, according to the language of the statute, he says he hasn't authorized it.
Well, the statute says that the Attorney General shall authorize the importation of a firearm, yeah, if the firearm meets the yeah, conditions. And I think the fact that it's mandatory suggests that what Congress had in mind was that it would be, that it's, if it meets the criteria. And since machine guns and surplus military firearms are specifically prohibited, the other language, the exception language, which gives some, if you will, discretion to the Attorney General or some breadth of authority, can only refer to the sporting purposes language. Otherwise, the shell doesn't mean much of anything. And Congress clearly contemplated that the permits would be granted, basically, unless. And so the only language that makes any sense then, the only way to construe the language to make any sense is that the such firearm language refers back to the sporting purposes test. And what that would mean is that if a firearm, excuse me, if a barrel is from a surplus military firearm or a machine gun, because the statute specifically refers to they can't authorize the importation of the firearm, and firearm is defined in Section 921 as the entire unit or the receiver, that Congress did not contemplate that a barrel in and of itself, even if it was a barrel from a surplus military firearm or a machine gun, was not importable.
And what's your reaction to the government's argument that, under your theory, prohibited weapons could be disassembled, imported, and then reassembled?
Well, when you say prohibited weapons, you mean machine guns,
yeah,
or surplus,
uh-huh,
military?
Right, yeah.
The response to that is that you can't bring in the rest of the firearm. That couldn't happen. You couldn't bring them in and then reassemble them because you couldn't bring the receiver in, the receiver being the heart of the firearm, and that's what's defined as the firearm, so you'd never get those in. So I don't remember them making that argument, but if that was the argument.
So then there's no reason to prohibit bringing the barrels in?
Excuse me?
So then there's no reason to prohibit bringing the barrels in?
That's right. The only barrels that could not be brought in would be barrels for non-sporting handguns, and that's what Congress plainly intended.
Whoa. Where in the statute is it plain that Congress intended that?
Well, the statute talks about non-sporting firearms, and the barrels for non-sporting firearms.
Right. Does it say anything about handguns?
The statute does not, but that's how...
Might we not expect that we're supposed to interpret the words that are in the statute?
Yes, but...
Since none of them is handgun, it's a little hard to say that's all Congress
wanted. Well, that's what... two responses to that, Your Honor. First of all, if one... As the district court said, the statute is not a model of clarity, so that with that slight...
If we have an understatement contest, you get to enter that one.
That's the district court. That being the case, then it is perfectly legitimate at that point to look at the legislative history, and as we've recited in the
And there's a lot of cases that use different language to make this point, but at most you've done is shown a purpose of Congress when you take the legislative history you expect.
Right.
Now, we do not know whether Congress intended to accomplish that goal with a scalpel or with a sledgehammer unless we look at the words of the statute. And the words of the statute are not limited to the scalpel that you would have us extract from the legislative history.
That's true, Your Honor. And even if the court were to say that the statute, in light of what Congress was discussing when it was enacted, that the statute was limited to barrels for non-sporting firearms generally, that would accomplish our goal, because what we're trying to do is import barrels for firearms, which meet both long guns and handguns, which meet the sporting purposes test. So you don't have to go as far as holding that for the fair and Mr. Barrow to win this case. But the other point I wanted to make about is that ATF, shortly after the statute was enacted, promulgated regulations purporting to interpret the statute, and in those regulations, they focus specifically on the fact that on non-sporting handguns. And those regulations, Your Honor, are, of course, having...
Your second point, and it may be your stronger point, is that even if they could do what they're doing here, they would have to do it by notice and comment
correct. If they want to do what they're doing, at a minimum, they need to go back and amend the existing regulations, which they promulgated in 1988. They can't just simply ignore them and say, we're coming up with a new construction of the statute. They've got to go back and express that supposed new construction of the statute in the regulations, because they have regulations specifically addressing this point.
Well, the district court's view of that was that the letter didn't change anything at all, that the earlier regulation...
Right.
I think
that as a matter of law is just wrong. The district court erred on that as a matter of law.
Why?
Because the regulations, the regulation that district court cited, it only cited one regulation correctly, was not in conflict, but there are other regulations dealing with the same issue the district court didn't even mention, and it's those regulations. The district court mentioned 47.8.112B, and the regulation that we believe is in conflict, and is in conflict, is 47 8.113A, which says no barrel for a handgun not generally recognized as particularly suitable for or readily adaptable to sporting purposes shall be imported or brought into the United States or possession thereof by any person. There is no equivalent language in the regulations dealing with barrels for rifles. And so it's, I think it's clear that the language of the regulations, not the one that the district court cited, but the other regulations, which the district court didn't even mention, are the ones that are in conflict. And we've, there's some other regulations which...
If I think that the Attorney General is correct in his interpretation of the statute, that is, if he's right that the plain language of the statute it supports his interpretation, and if that means that your client is therefore not eligible to import these barrels, why do we need to even look at the argument about notice and comment? Wouldn't, I mean, even if it was required from your client's point of view, wouldn't it just be harmless error?
I don't think it
would. In other words, what difference does it make to your client if under the statute he can't import these barrels?
Well, Your Honor, which you said the interpretation of the Attorney General of the statute, which interpretation are we talking about, the one expressed in the open letter or the one expressed in the
regulation? No, the one expressed in the statute. In other words, if his interpretation of the statute, namely that these weapons cannot be imported because the exception is not limited to handguns, that's his position.
Well,
that
position
exception covers all three categories of weapons.
And
if he's right about that, then what difference does it make whether or not the July letter should have been published in the Federal Register?
Well, I think, first of all, when you say his interpretation, you mean his interpretation, as I said, under the open letter?
No, my question is, if under the statute your client's not entitled to import these weapons?
Assuming that the current interpretation is...
No, I'm not asking you about the interpretation. I'm just looking at the language of the statute.
Right.
If the statute's clear and you're not entitled to import the weapons, the barrels, then what difference does it make whether or not the July letter should have been published?
Your Honor, the point I'm trying to make is that they expressed an interpretation of the statute and the regulations in 1988. I think that was the correct interpretation of the statute. Now they've changed that interpretation. So
if we conclude that the current interpretation is required by the plain language of the statute,
and that the regulations are essentially invalid,
well, whatever they say, they're irrelevant. In other words, the plain language of the statute requires the Attorney General's current interpretation. What difference does it make whether or not the July letter should have been published?
Well,
in your case,
I think because under the Supreme Court case law, that they have a duty to go back and amend the regulation, that they can't simply come up with a new interpretation of the statute.
You're missing my point. Yeah. I'm asking about harmless error, basically, which is part of APA review.
Right.
In other words, if the Attorney General's current position is required by the plain language of the statute, then isn't the question of whether or not the July letter needed notice and comment a question that is irrelevant to your case? That is harmless error.
I think you'd be right that it would be harmless error if the current interpretation
is required by the plain language.
Right, was correct.
But you don't think it is.
I don't think it's correct. Right.
Yeah, I understand your point.
I don't think it's correct. I think the correct interpretation was the one that they expressed in the regulations in 1988.
Can I just ask also, the government argues that Mr. Barrow, your client, never claimed that the barrels he was importing were for importable.
Well, he said in his application for importation, his reason for importation was resale. Did he specifically articulate these are importable? Mm-hmm. No, he didn't use those words. But the fact that he filed the application and said he wanted to import them for resale, I think clearly suggests that
it's implicit.
That it's implicit, and of course we're dealing here with a motion to dismiss, so the allegations in the complaint have to be taken mm-hmm. in the light most favorable to Mr. Barrow. And, Your Honor, unless there are any other further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thanks, Your Honors. I'd like to start off with the issue that Judge Tatel presented about the plain language of the statute and the reading that it supports. I believe that Mr. Gardner had suggested that the reading that he proposes would be consistent with Congress's intent to avoid breaking down and importing these firearms in the United States. And that's not correct. The language of the statute that refers to such firearm refers back to whether or not the firearm has been authorized for importation under the provision and applies equally to frames, receivers, and barrels. So the hypothetical that Mr. Gardner proposed wouldn't be valid under the language of the statute. Another question that the court posed that I'd like to address concerns the regulation. Mr. Gardner alluded to some conflict between regulatory language and the statutory language, and it seems that the court understands the arguments why ATF's interpretation fits the criteria for an interpretive rule here. And I'd just like to point the court to plaintiff's reply brief at page 2, where they lay out the text of the regulations for which they perceive a conflict. As the government explained in its brief, there is no conflict with the language of the regulation. To the extent that the regulations focus on handguns, those regulations were never intended to be exclusive. When ATF promulgated the regulations in 1988, it focused on what was the main regulatory concern of the agency and the regulated industry, that is, the types of firearms that ATF was being presented with were predominantly handguns and rifles that fit the sporting test. ATF was almost never confronted with a rifle that didn't fit the sporting purpose test. On the occasions that it was, it denied importation of those rifles properly under the statute directly, because ATF has always understood the statute to apply equally to rifles and handguns.
What do you think about my question that if we agreed with you that the statute's clear and that the barrels in this case are not eligible for importation under the plain language of the statute, that it doesn't make any difference? We don't have to address the question of whether or not the July letter had to be published or not. What do you think about that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You didn't say that in your brief. I'm just wondering. And is that because it's harmless or what? I mean, even though the agency might have violated the APA, we don't have to address the question, right? Because it's not outcome determinative in this case.
Yes, so the government in its brief pointed out that plaintiffs are claiming that ATF's interpretation led to the denial of the application. But the government points out that the denial of the application had nothing to do with the interpretation, because under no interpretation that ATF has ever had of the statute would these barrels be importable. And then the explanation as to notice and comment not being violated was the government's, in any event, there was no notice and comment violation here. But Your Honor is correct that if the court agrees that the plain language precludes the importation, then that's the only issue.
It does seem to be an interpretation that is different, what's set forth in the open letter, that is somewhat different than what's set, broader than what's set forth in the regulations that are cited on page 2. Should that be the subject of notice and comment?
No, Your Honor. What the court focuses on is whether there would be an inconsistency in the regulations. Here, the regulations refer to one part of the field sketched out by the statute, the part of the agency's enforcement authority that was most at issue at the time that the regulations were promulgated. There's no inconsistency between those regulations and the agency acknowledging, as it did at the time the regulations were promulgated, the statute reached broader.
The regulations were at least silent as to the type of weapon that we're dealing with here. Does the greater expansiveness of the interpretation expressed in the open letter create a need for notice and comment?
No, Your Honor. The open letter refers to the elimination of a repair or replacement exception. So to be clear, the open letter doesn't speak to this distinction that plaintiffs are raising between a handgun and a rifle. That's a separate issue.
Then coming back and saying that even if it had required, it isn't what happened here.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Judge Tatel was positive.
Precisely.
Okay. So we perhaps don't need to decide whether there should have been notice and comment or?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If the court has no further questions, the government's case is set forth in its briefs, and for the reason in the brief, we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Your Honor, 3 points. First of all, the last point that these kind of barrels were never importable before. I mean, that's just simply untrue. First of all, I can tell the court that Mr. Barrow was importing these barrels, and second of all, the open letter itself specifically states that ATF recognizes that importers have, I'm looking at page 47 of the joint appendix, have in the past obtained import permits authorizing the importation of barrels and receivers from non-importable firearms for repair and replacement. So it's simply not the case that these have never been imported. Up until this open letter came out, they were regularly being imported. And even the open letter then goes on to say that they're going to continue to allow them to be imported because permits had been issued, and it wouldn't be appropriate to withdraw those permits when commercial transactions were already in place. Second of all, with regard to the statement about the statute having the words frame, receiver, or barrel, those are in there because the sporting purposes of the test applies also to the frame, receiver, or barrel
that
of a firearm.
Was offered to deconstruct your hypothetical in which you said that there was no danger of, I guess yours was a counter hypothetical, there was no danger of the original hypothetical that a gun could be disassembled and brought in parts. You said no, it couldn't. There was no danger of that because the other parts couldn't be brought in.
Right.
But the reason they can't be brought in is the same statute.
No, the reason they can't be brought in is because they'd be the frame, receiver, or barrel of an NFA weapon, a machine gun, or a surplus military firearm. They can't be imported for that reason, not because of this language in the exception. They can't be imported because it says NFA weapon, NFA firearm.
That which we're construing today has the language frame, receiver, or barrel.
It does.
Same
because
clause of the same statute.
It does because there are firearms which are not NFA weapons and which are not surplus military firearms which still have to meet the sporting purposes test, your average handgun.
It would seem that there's something possible to be covered by that clause that has a frame, receiver, or barrel.
Yes.
It could be disassembled in Guatemala and brought in pieces under
yes,
your theory.
Yes, there could be, for example, let me give you an example, a handgun, that
okay.
a receiver, a framer of a handgun, which could either have a long barrel put on it or a short barrel put on it, and if it had the long barrel put on it, it would be importable as a sporting arm. If it had the short barrel put on it, it would not be importable, but it's the identical frame. And the last point I wanted to make is with regard to the regulation, the government indicates that they said they were almost never confronted with rifle imports where there was sporting purposes test was an issue. Well, clearly, if it was almost never, it means that they were confronted with that. Yet, despite that fact, there's nothing in the regulations which were promulgated in 1988 that addresses rifles.
As I understood counsel's position, they said they could have been prohibited directly under the language of the statute without having any further regulation. What's wrong with that position?
Well, I think that they've promulgated a regulation which purports to interpret and apply that statute. And if you go back and look at the original regulation that had been promulgated, or which would put out for notice and comment, they withdrew that, even though that covered long guns. So they eventually understood the statute is limited to handguns.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.